the audience, and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name is Jack O'Brien. I am the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and today we are talking about a subject you may not be accustomed to your podcast talking to you about if you're anything like me. Podcasts are somewhat chaste medium for me. I think I have always associated them with talk radio and NPR, and I've always just assumed the people at NPR reproduce like conifer plants. Anyways, our sex talk today will not involve any but the most vague, clearly fictional references to our own sexual experiences because we're comedy writers, and I'd rather believe my favorite comedy writers never leave the confines of their sensible sweaters. And instead, we're talking about these weird underlying mechanisms that control who we choose to have sex with, get into relationships with, and if it goes far enough, eventually marry. For some context, there's this book I think I've mentioned before on the podcast called Incognito by David Eagleman. He's a neuroscientist who thinks that we don't have access to a lot of the operations in our brain that are making decisions for us. According to his model, there's the conscious part of the mind that we have access to, where we tell ourselves why we do stuff, but the actual reasons that we're making each decision actually has very little to do with the story that we tell ourselves. There are these sort of automated mechanisms in our brain that are secretly calling the shots, and the conscious part is just making up excuses for why we've done something we don't understand. And I think that Eagleman's model can be especially valuable when looking at what we're talking about today, because there's a bunch of science and behavioral data that we've covered on the site that suggests our sexual urges and preferences and decisions are being controlled by a part of our mind that we don't have access to, and that plays by rules we aren't even aware we're playing by. And, you know, we have songs and sayings that make sense of these behaviors and justify the decisions we make about who to sleep with and marry, ultimately. And our romantic and sexual impulses and decisions are actually determined by these things we don't really understand, these mechanisms that we don't really have access to. So we start out talking about some surprising rules that are controlling one pretty obvious system, our general conception of beauty. And then we move on to a factor you've probably never, I guarantee you've never consciously thought about when deciding if someone was attractive, the diversity of their immune system. Science thinks this is actually super important when determining who we're attracted to. And then in the second half of the podcast, we're going to discuss some almost completely random things that can trick you into falling in love with someone who you might not ordinarily be interested in. So yeah, hopefully this won't make you feel as uncomfortable as it made poor Christy Harrison, one of our writers and editors who is on this call and who has written brilliantly about these studies on Crack before, and who found it less comfortable to discuss this subject with her children home from school due to a snow day and in the next room. So yeah, here is our conversation with Christy and Soren Bowie back in about an hour. First, some footnotes. I don't know why I get so intoxicated, man. You don't know why you do what you do. So high on
It would have been weirder if my kids had picked up the phone because they didn't know you were calling me, and I realized, oh shoot, I gotta quick get it.
They should probably be on the phone for this. I think this is the appropriate way for them to have their first talk about sex.
Are they within earshot of you while you do this call?
No, I've locked the door and said, don't come in here, because it's a snow day. So they were all home today using the computer in and out. I said, don't come in here, and I'm just going to beat them if they sneak in.
Well, that's a topic for another episode. All right, I am joined today by Christy Harrison and Soren Bowie, two of our columnists and editors at Cracked. Christy on the phone from Idaho. Hello, Christy.
Hello.
And Soren Bowie right here in the impressive flesh.
I'm right here. It's beautiful.
Hello, guys. So today, I'm just going to throw out a suggestion here. Let's talk about sex, baby.
Ooh.
I'm talking all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex to the people at home or in the crowd. It keeps coming up anyhow. Don't, and I mean do not, decoy, avoid, or make void the topic. That's as far as I'm going to go.
Let's talk about sex.
Did you guys remember that part? Don't decoy, make void, or avoid the topic? Was it
no.
Make void?
That was a late night rhyme scheme.
This is
right
like
there.
A legal brief. Don't make void the topic, gentlemen of the jury.
It'll be boot.
Yeah.
But we are going to talk about sex today, guys. Romantic attraction, non-platonic love.
Well, although you're gonna have the A-team for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Here, we're all married.
We're all married, successfully married.
I would call us love success stories.
We're nailing it. And today we're going to try a little bit of a format, because I feel like most of what we know about love and romance and all that stuff is based on a few serious relationships we've had in the past, and then love song lyrics and cliches. And I don't feel like it's a really popular topic for people to like read up on the science of the book of love from the song lyrics. Not a real book, I don't believe. And so I pulled up my memories of some cliched love song lyrics that I might be getting wrong. And then I'm going to ask you guys to decide whether they're true or false, the ideas being presented in those lyrics. And then we're going to talk about why that is or isn't the case. For instance, "You are so beautiful to me, can't you see?" Question mark. The kind of bullshit cliche would be "beauty is in the eye of the beholder." Soren, do you want to buzz in on this one? Christy?
Yeah, well, I've been hitting the table. Does this buzzer not work?
Just for design.
We like to think that the beauty's in the eye of the beholder. You see a couple together and you're like, physically, they don't correlate at all.
And Soren's talking about me and my wife right now. He's literally looking at a
just
picture
way,
of me and my wife.
Way too hot for him. What is going on? And we think, well, you know.
And vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that happens the other direction as well, especially in the other direction. There are quite a few attractive men with not as attractive women. That's what you mean, right, Christy? And we like to think, well, when you're in love, it has nothing necessarily to do with how you look. But who we find attractive, they have done scientific studies on it, and it turns out that we are really just machines. When we see somebody who's attractive, there is a uniformity to attractiveness within the world, regardless of race, regardless of gender. It can be broken down to mathematical distances and ratios of your features. So the way that your eyebrows are related to your eyes, or the way that your nose is related to your upper lip, that if you take faces and you modify those faces so that they match these features, people immediately find them more attractive. So in this one study they did, they had all these people come in, look at pictures, and it was basically hot or not. And they just rated people and said how attractive they were. Then they got the same faces back, but they were altered to match these ratios and distances of what a face we think is as the platonic ideal of attractive. And it worked. Everybody thought these people were more attractive. So there is this ultimate goal of attractiveness we want to achieve, and that's what we want in our significant other.
Soren, how many plastic surgeries have you had? You've had quite a few, is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's at this point, it's hard to remember all of them. I'd have to check my rhinoplasty journal.
I think that that's true in a laboratory setting, right? That there are completely objectively attractive features. There's context, I guess, out in the real world, right? There are like famous actors who don't have symmetrical faces. I feel like especially with men, how attractive women find men is a lot determined by context and not necessarily by...
Yeah, so that's the other aspect of that, is that you can't necessarily prioritize. It depends on what you prioritize. Some people prioritize a face, and those people are considered assholes. But when you find somebody that you love, it's more than just what their face looks like.
It's about the junk.
Yeah, it's what's in the trunk,
right?
Mostly.
Absolutely. Symmetry in particular. They've done all sorts of studies, and people who just have symmetrical bodies, you don't even probably really notice people with asymmetrical bodies. But for instance, there's this 3-point corollary between how attractive the general populace people in a survey will find a person, how good that person is at dancing, and how symmetrical their body is. And those 3 points all correlate with one another really closely, to the point that scientists think that we developed dancing to advertise how symmetrical we are. People who are really good dancers are just basically advertising, look at how symmetrical my body is. I can move like this.
I would think dancing's like how good at sex you are. That's the evolutionary purpose, not look at my sides and how they're equal.
I don't think scientists are very good dancers, to be honest with you.
What I used to do when I go to bars is just bring a mirror with me and put it over half my face so everyone could see that it's perfectly symmetrical.
You win every time. I feel like the attraction, what you find attractive, is different than who you are attracted to. Like, that's the wrong word. I could look at a picture of somebody and say, that person's really beautiful, or they're very symmetrical, but not be attracted to them because that's maybe not what I like. I think the language that we're using is tricky because you can say somebody's beautiful and not be attracted to them because it's not interesting.
That's another thought, is that people can be so attractive that they're boring. I think that's true. Soren is, I mean, that is probably worth noting, is that Soren is an objectively beautiful young woman.
I would call myself traditionally attractive as far as women go.
I said that wrong.
But I do think that that comes...
Understanding among the staff at Cracked is how beautiful Soren is. So this is all hurting his feelings, I'm sure. This is the first you've heard that
this is all I've got, Christy.
He's the handsome guy.
I'm so sorry.
I do agree, Christy, that there's a context, especially today. I don't dismiss pretty women, but I also assume that they're going to have had things extremely easy and might not always have the most developed personalities. That's not fair, but I do think that that's a thing that comes with being really good looking is, well, they're probably not that interesting a person. It's just sort of a stereotype that those poor, poor, extremely attractive people have to live with the burden of.
Does living in California change that? Because I feel like there are way more beautiful people there than other places. And so you can't make assumptions about people and how they got to looking like they look.
It sort of reinforces it out here in Los Angeles.
Because yeah, everybody's uninterested.
Because people are just painfully boring.
It's just a bunch of really attractive, really uninteresting people talking to each other and not listening to each other, just talking at each other. No, that's not true, L.A. Love you, L.A. That was convincing.
It's a Randy Newman song in right here, put it out there.
Yeah, the sarcastic Randy Newman song. I agree also. Dancing is probably a little bit more complex than advertising the symmetry of your body. I'd say sports probably has a little more to do with the symmetry of your body. Soren, you'll be like walking down the street and if challenged, you can just do a flip off of something, which is something I can't do because my right side is giant and I have a tiny, teeny, tiny left side of my body and it would just flop all over the place. But I do feel like symmetry helps in that regard.
Yeah,
right?
They're probably just flags for the same thing, which is you're advertising that you're good at using your body, which that can translate to sex, that can translate to, in like a very primordial sense, to safety, that you're good at running away from stuff or fighting stuff. But the fact that you can dance well means that you have good control of your body. The fact that you have symmetry means that you probably have good control of your body because you don't have to account for anything. You don't have to account for a weird nub on one side.
I do want to just say that all of these things, I think, that we're going to be talking about today, the one thing that science has found, there's a bunch of really controversial science about the possibility that humans have pheromones, sort of scent-based glands that animals use to like smell one another, mark territories, and find out when the other one is in heat or ready to mate. It's what a lot of animals have instead of words. And there's long been this idea that humans might have this. And we're going to talk about a few different studies that looked into that throughout this conversation. But I do want to say that the thing that all of these studies, every article that I've researched about the subject seems to miss, is that humans are just way more complex than any other animal. All of these things are just by tiny, minor degrees. Tom Cruise is a terrible dancer. Google Tom Cruise dancing. He's the worst dancer. But there are plenty of women who, knowing that in the 90s, still would have been okay sleeping with him, because how well you dance is only 0.001% of the equation. But it is a part of the equation. All of these factors that we're talking about today are just interesting things that have been found in studies to have, they matter statistically in one way or another, but they're not the only thing. And obviously there are counterexamples because they're not the most important thing when deciding who you mate with, right?
Is that a question? Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our second song lyric from another classic love song. You take two steps forward and I take two steps back. We come together because opposites attract, and you know it ain't perfect, just a natural fact. We come together because opposites attract. True or false?
Is that Paul Abdul?
Paul Abdul and MC Scat Cat. Geometrically, not sound advice. Taking two steps forward and having someone take two steps back does not bring you together.
But it does make you good dancers, I would say.
Right.
Where are you when you start stepping? Are you at like a two different points in the room.
The edge of a cliff, Christy.
I believe at all times during the Opposites Attract video, Paula Abdul and MC Scat Cat were starting out with their backs together and their arms crossed. Like they were like members of a B-boy 1980s hip-hop group. In that case, he takes two steps forward, she takes two steps back, but they're back to back.
They are doing a two-step, but back to back. And so they're moving in sync. She doesn't know anything about...
Paula Abdul is way better at geometry than me. By the way, that was all from memory. If those aren't the actual lyrics, I apologize to anyone who I may have misled. But I do want to use this, Christy, as an opportunity to talk about Red Queen theory. Christy, tell me what the Red Queen theory is.
The Red Queen theory is this theory that we know that there are animals out there that can reproduce asexually. They can cut off a limb and that limb becomes another animal, right? Starfish, I think, and aphids, they don't need males at all, I guess, at this point.
You're telling me this isn't how human reproduction works.
Right. So I'm told. I mean, that's not how it worked in my house, but I don't know about your house. So the Red Queen theory tries to explain why humanity still requires, and lots of animals still require, intercourse to reproduce. And the idea is that we constantly need to keep fighting parasites and bacteria, and the only way to keep moving forward is to introduce that genetic material that's new. Otherwise, we'd just be clones of ourselves. And so there was a study that watched snails, and some of the snails reproduced sexually, and some of them cloned themselves. And the ones that cloned die out because they've got no strategies, I guess, or immunities to the different bacteria and parasites that are going to get introduced into their bodies, and they can't fight them. So I guess I should go back and explain where the line comes from. The theory comes from a scene in Through the Looking Glass, and there's this race, but they're not going anywhere, and the queen says it takes all the running you can do just to keep in the same place. And so there's just this idea that for in order for humanity to fight what's out there that really stronger and quicker than us and smarter than us.
We're talking about viruses and bacteria parasites and all the things that are trying to kill us and take over our body.
And the world, yeah. We have to keep mingling.
Right, keep mingling. That was such an adorable way to put it. So in Through the Looking Glass, they're running. It doesn't seem like they're getting anywhere, right? It's an arms race. It's like a biological arms race that we're in.
Exactly. So the idea is the next version of yourself is better and stronger, and it retains some of the immunities you picked up before. The next version after that's better and stronger. And they're doing the same thing. They're in the same race that we are, and the winner is who takes over the world. And so far, so good for us, huh?
Yeah. Well, so from that perspective, the more different you are genetically from your partner, the more healthy your child is likely to be. Is that right? Because you're bringing together a more diverse set of cards that you're shuffling together and that the bacteria now have to deal with that they've never dealt with before.
Yeah, I guess so. How diverse are you going to be from another human? What are you bringing to the table?
Me?
Genetically.
Bench press about 250.
It's not true.
Can run a 6-minute mile.
Probably true. I believe that.
Chicks dig really fast mile times. Also, chicks dig dudes who refer to them as chicks and refer to themselves as dudes. No, but so this ties into this thing called MHC, which is major histocompatibility complex. All right. So basically, there's this part of our DNA that we've discovered as we're like decoding the genome that is both responsible for regulating our immune system and keeping track of the different parts of our immune system. And also it's involved with choosing a potential mate, regulating hormones having to do with sexuality. And it's called the MHC. So we've covered on the site some studies that seem to indicate that such a thing as human pheromones exist. In one study, scientists made men and women wear the same t-shirt for a few days without wearing deodorant and then had the opposite group smell them. And the people were able to smell and rate it as more attractive the scent of people who had MHC that was less similar to theirs. They were like genetically more different because I guess that's sort of the goal with the Red Queen theory. The goal is to come together with people who have more diverse immune systems than you, or like more different immune systems, so that your kid has just the weirdest immune system that any parasite or bacteria has ever wanted to see.
We're constantly trying to think of ways to create a secret weapon against viruses, basically. We're figuring out as many concoctions as we possibly can of defenses that they can't get through.
This is still controversial. The whole pheromones thing is controversial, but there are scientists who claim that MHC is the most influential aspect of how attractive you find someone that you just aren't aware of. You don't realize that that's what's attracting you to the person. But this brings us to our next one, actually, and I do have a love song lyric that leads us into it, so I'll just do that. It's in his kiss, that's what it is. Oh yeah, it's in his kiss, that's where it is. Oh yeah, that's from the Cher song Shoop.
Everyone listening at home, you should know when Jack does karaoke, this is exactly how it is. He doesn't sing it. He
all
just
right,
reads
it's
it
in his kiss. It's in his kiss, people. That's what it is. It's in his kiss. Do you hear me? Oh yeah.
Even puts those question marks and things in it. It's bizarre.
But so the idea of when you hear someone say it was like kissing my sister, it was like kissing my brother. Obviously, your brother or sister is not going to have a MHC that is different from yours. They're going to have one that's extremely similar. So when you kiss someone and it doesn't seem right, there's some sort of ineffable thing that you don't actually have conscious access to, but you can just tell there's something off. There are scientists who believe that's MHC. And Christy, I know you have an alternate theory on this, but basically they say that one of the reasons scientists think we might have evolved kissing is sort of like as a taste test to like sort of get a sense of what someone's MHC is before you actually go through with the process of mating with them, which is more work than just kissing.
That explains the scene in Back to the Future where the mother kisses Marty and she's like, ugh, and they didn't even know. They had this pre-knowledge of why that was wrong.
She was tasting half of her own MHC.
Exactly. Ugh.
It also explains that scene from Pretty Woman where she's going to have sex with Richard Gere, but she refuses to kiss him on the mouth because, in my theory, they're related.
Oh, God.
What?
No, it's a lie. I don't have that theory yet.
All right.
Oh,
so,
you can't do that. I believe everything I hear.
It does explain how Leia kind of knew Luke. Don't they? Yeah, they're not super excited about each other.
No. I can't remember if the kiss gets interrupted or not, but they certainly never even think about doing it again.
Right. It's just kind of like, yeah, that was weird. So the sense of someone's MHC and like your ability to sense their sexual hormones, I guess, gets heightened during ovulation for a female, and men are like better able to sense it, and women are better able to at that time sense the person who has the compatible MHC with them. There's a weird thing with birth control that I will get to at the end. It's sort of controversial. That says that basically birth control kind of tells you the wrong type of person, or the person who doesn't have your most compatible MHC. TOD man. I've been wanting to do that the whole time. Christy, this is another love song lyric that I think you have something to say about. It ain't no fun if the homies can't have none. It ain't no fun if the homies can't have none. Are you familiar with that song?
I don't think so. What is that? What's that from?
It's a Snoop Dogg song about how sex isn't fun unless it's like a bunch of guys having sex with one woman.
I don't know that
song. So the same theme as Night Train.
You don't know. This seems real creepy now because you're not making
really
the connection to the thing about the women making noise during sex from your article about.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. This is awful for me, by the way, having this whole conversation because I don't talk like this in the real world.
Okay.
Only when I'm writing in on print for Cracked. So the theory is that men and women were never meant to be monogamous, that we were always meant to have lots and lots of partners. And so this idea that making noise when you have sex is like a mating call for other partners to come and join. I'm done. You guys can go from there.
I'm so sorry. I just thought you were a filthy-mouthed sailor based on your writing.
If it helps, Christy, just picture Jack and me naked.
Oh, no, that wasn't supposed to make you laugh. So. Yeah, so the idea is basically if you imagine noises being made during sex, this is not how it is in my household. I am way louder than my wife. But
Jack sounds like a 7-year-old woman.
No, I say words. Anyways, the idea is that the reason that females are louder than males is because back in the hunter-gatherer days, it was more beneficial for a woman to have lots of partners at once, because then you've got lots of different potential, you know, genetic samples vying to fertilize the egg. And so, therefore, the noises that are made during sex are like sort of a natural way of calling out to other homies saying, hey, we're having fun, but it could also be fun.
And before anyone accuses Christy of being sexist with this, there's reason to believe that this is true because of what we see in nature. So there's bonobo monkeys, which are famous for having sex for everything. They solve their disputes with sex. They celebrate with sex. They do everything with sex. And the females are extraordinarily loud as compared to the males. And in every single sense, it has nothing to do with the orgasm. It has to do with just this biological imperative where the female is loud, and it allows the other males to know, hey, here's the greatest chance of progeny right here. And they can all encircle and mingle.
Not the greatest chance, but a chance. And the bonobos are very similar to us. They'll just take any shot they can get. Well, that did not go well.
Sorry, that's my fault, isn't it?
No, it's okay. You have your children gathered around for story time.
They're all right here.
I want to hear Christy's theory on kissing.
Oh, okay, yeah, I like this one. So this is a different theory, and maybe they kind of go together because there's this swapping of spit that happens anyway. So this is maybe they complement each other. But there's this idea that when you kiss, you have a chance of exposing yourself to this virus, which is a version of the herpes virus, and I think it's cytomegalovirus. That's how I say it. So if you got that virus as a woman when you're pregnant, your baby could have all kinds of problems. Baby could be blind and deaf, and I mean, there's motor coordination issues. There's just lots of bad things that can happen to a baby if the mother contracts that version of the virus while she's pregnant. But if the woman contracts it ahead of time in increments, then the baby's fine. And lots of women get exposed to the virus ahead of time. So there's this theory that by kissing, you give yourself a chance to kind of build up an immunity to this horrific virus, and then by the time you get pregnant, you're fine, and your baby's fine. So that's why people don't act like animals and just do it as soon as they meet each other, because they need a courting period to introduce this virus into the body to protect the unborn children.
Yeah, they do seem very similar, right? So yours is sort of a protection, right? They are sort of getting inoculated against having this disease for the first time when they're pregnant. And they're also using that opportunity to try and tell if their potential mate is going to give them a child that's healthy in other ways.
Yeah, there's so much going on there.
Yeah.
With kissing.
I think this comes back to the idea of humans being extremely complex. The beaver has pheromones in its glands by its butt that are so powerful that we use them in every sort of scented product in manufacturing.
That musk, it's the musk smell?
Yeah.
It's only colognes? Okay.
Yeah, colognes are full of beaver ass gland juice. And my theory is that humans have very, very little of this stuff left over, but it's enough that we can consult it. We can't just smell each other from across the room. We have to like go up and just put our mouths on each other's saliva glands and like taste them for minutes at a time. You think about kissing, it's a completely fucking insane thing to do.
Yeah, I think that if dogs were in control of the world and we were their pets, that would be every cartoon on the internet would be us kissing each other as opposed to them sniffing each other's
just
asses.
Like
that's a weirder thing to do.
Onto each other.
At least as sniffing, there's still like a barrier of air between the two. But with kissing, you're vacuuming out the bacteria from somebody else's mouth with your own.
And human mouths are way filthier than dog mouths.
I don't think so. My dog is eating his poop like all the time now.
I know, but the reason they can do that is because they have a naturally clean mouth.
If the DNA of, what's it called? The Run DMC? What's it called in our DNA? What's that?
MCHTOD, man.
Yeah, that stuff.
MHCDOD, man.
If it can fundamentally, if we can acknowledge it in somebody else, even in something like saliva, I'd imagine that it has effects on every quadrant of your life. So the more diverse that you are, that affects your characteristics as well, your habits and things like that, I'd imagine. And in a relationship, I know that it's been proven that when couples are together, they will develop a way to account for one another's blindnesses. So if somebody's not good at directions or somebody's not good with money, the other one will immediately usurp that spot and take it over and be like, well, this is what I'm responsible for. And a lot of times with when people are looking for relationships, I feel like maybe that's also what they're looking for, which is somebody who's capable of filling in these lackings that they have in their own life.
Yeah, they've found that people who get divorced after 15 years, it's the equivalent of suffering a serious brain trauma because you've just come to rely on your spouse for certain parts of just the daily tasks of thinking and doing certain things that you're like pretty helpless for as many years as you were married or as many months as you were married in years or something. I don't remember.
Your significant other is like your auxiliary storage drive and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. You're just scanning different people.
I have literally never put together a computer my entire life that I've had a computer. This is absolutely true. My husband has put up the TV. I have no clue how to make TVs work. Or a DVD, I mean, a DVR player, all of that.
You're telling me you don't know how to build a computer from scratch.
No.
How do you work? No. How do you work for crack.com if you didn't build your computer from scratch?
Christy, he's ribbing you.
Over.
None of us have built computers.
Your husband is MacGyver. Nobody can do that.
He used to build the computers before we were doing laptops and stuff. He used to physically buy the parts and put them together. But I mean, if I just got a computer out of a box, I wouldn't know what to install and how to make it safe and how to make it run. But this is such a bad stereotype. Don't put this in there because this is bad. But he's never like planned groceries for a week. I don't think he would know how to do a week's worth of meals and get the right food in the house for everybody to not starve. So I think we'd both be in bad shape.
Sounds like a real dunce,
but
Christy.
For the worst reasons. Gosh, I wish I had flipped it and said I was the one that did the computers and he does the groceries.
So those are some things that are just across the board indicators. I do like the idea that each person is looking for some MHC match that is distinct from theirs, because then it's not 1% of the guys get all the women and 1% of the girls get all the guys. You know, each of us has our own MHC and we're looking for someone else who has a uniquely different MHC from us. That's sort of the scientific version of there being a soulmate out there for every one of us who just has weird immune systems. But yeah, all of the studies and all the papers that I've read on this keep coming back to the idea. Well, fragrance companies keep trying to isolate this pheromone that is going to drive everybody crazy. They just keep coming back to Love Potion number 9, the premise of that movie, and being like, well, if you can't do that, then there's no such thing as pheromones. But it seems like it's much more subtle than that, and so subtle than that, that we have to taste test each other's tongues for minutes at a time, like disgusting beasts.
I think you were right at the beginning when you said that as much as these all matter and that they are part of the equation, they must be so small, because there is a huge elephant in the room that we're not addressing with any of these, a huge pink elephant in the room, and that's the homosexuality. We constantly think of all these as what's going to happen with progeny, what we're going to create out of this. And that's certainly not a concern with homosexuality, but still these people are attracted to one another. What makes them attractive?
They did the sweaty, gross, shitty smelling shirt test with homosexual males, and they were more attracted to other homosexual males.
Really, really?
Yeah.
That's absolutely amazing.
And heterosexual males were more attracted to heterosexual female shirts. And there's this whole level of things that we're kind of not aware of, but that are like controlling our behavior. We're all robots. We're all machines.
And they're more attuned. Didn't in that same experiment they show pictures? So for instance, the women that they had smell the shirts, they showed pictures of men. They said, these men are more attractive, and the women ranked them. And then they smelled the shirts and it almost correlated perfectly. The guy who they thought was most attractive, it was also the shirt that they thought smelled the best. So you can even see it in their faces.
There's that. And then there's also the thing with the MHC where they ranked the MHC that was most diverse from them as the most appealing, and also said it reminded them of their ex-husbands or current husbands or whatever, which is creepy.
I'm a hot knife, I'm a hot knife, I'm a hot knife, he's a pat of butter. If I get a chance, I'm gonna show him that he's never gonna need another, never need another. If I'm butter, if I'm butter, if I'm butter, then he's a hot knife, he makes my heart a chance. I'm a hot knife, he's a pat of butter. If I get a chance, I'm gonna show him that he's never gonna need another, never need another. Thank you.
So there's also these things that science has found can kind of lead you astray. And I'm not going to do any more love song lyrics because I only have Jewel and Paula Cole left. All right, I can do Jewel. You were meant for me and I was meant for you. Yeah, I'm going about my business. I'm doing fine. But where would you be if I had you on the line? Same old story. Not much to say. Hearts are broken every day.
Put on my PJs and hop into bed.
I actually... That's cute. You can do these from now on. True or false, guys? True or false? You were meant for me and I was meant for you. Not us in particular, but is that possible that Jewel was meant for someone and someone was meant for Jewel?
I say false.
I think that's easier to believe when you live in a community that's 300 people or 1,000 people. But when you actually can have a sense of how big the world actually is and how many people there are, that seems so silly that there's one person.
When you live in a hip cosmopolitan society like Soren and I do here in Los Angeles. We're always speed dating and stuff.
And everyone here is terrible, so that can't be true.
Looking at the MHC thing, like we said, that could seem to indicate that we do have sort of a perfect match or people who are better matches than others. So there are these other things that are really good at throwing you off the scent of your soulmate that could cause you to reject your soulmate on your first date and marry the wrong person. Real shitbag. There's also sort of that sentiment of you just know. You know when a person's right for you and you're supposed to trust your gut. So here are some examples of how that could kind of lead you astray. One thing they found is that going to a horror movie on your first date, it brings back lots of artificial positives, or it can bring back lots of false positives for people liking someone more than they think, because our body is so stupid that it confuses the increased adrenaline and accelerated heart rate caused by fear with being aroused. Our body only knows one type of arousal. It's like, oh, heart's going a little fast here. I'm into this person, which seems like, okay, that's a temporary thing. So they did this study where they had men walking on two bridges. One of them was dangling 250 feet above a ravine, certain death over the edge of this bridge. And they had a woman, a person who was part of the experiment, who is attractive, asking them to take a survey halfway across the bridge. So the study was about a bunch of nonsense that had nothing to do with what it was actually about. You know, it was about their diet or something. And they just thought for some reason this lady was out on a really dangerous bridge. And then the second group of guys were given the survey on a much less dangerous bridge, little footbridge going over a small creek. And same woman. And the guys were all told to call this number, which was her number, if they had any questions or wanted to follow up about the study. So they were told to wait 2 days and then they could call. And after 2 days, the guys who were like on the 450 foot long bridge, those 230 foot drop to rocks and shallow rapids below, 50 to 60% of them all called the woman back. And like nobody else did, because they just remembered having a really special bond because they were terrified. They had increased adrenaline and increased heart rate. So subsequent studies have found that women are just as prone to the scare-induced hornies, as we called it in this article. It seems like it's a stereotypical first date to like take a girl to a scary movie or, you know, go on roller coasters, or why make out point is always 10 feet from a dangerous cliff. Guys know that this is giving them a better chance.
That has horrifying implications for the stereotypical dream of being rescued by like a Prince Charming too, like every fairy tale or every action movie where at the end the hero has negated the danger and now they're allowed to kiss each other in speed at the end. I wonder if they really liked each other.
Yeah, they were like, oh, God, are you my cousin?
But because they had survived this horrible thing together, they thought they were in love.
Yeah, every happily ever after scenario is just doomed because they just had this incredibly
traumatic experience. Yeah.
So the other way that the movie that you go to on a first date can affect things is, let's say you go to a sad movie because you're bad at picking dates to go to movies on. But you don't always know when it's a sad movie. There is a natural chemical in women's tears that will suppress the sexual hormones in a guy. It'll basically drop his libido and all sexual urges, and like he won't find her attractive at all.
Totally believe that.
Yeah, it makes sense also from an evolutionary perspective because it's a protection against women crying and not wanting a guy around them. It's a protection against rape, basically, right?
It's the hormone that lowers testosterone, right?
Yeah.
They have that. That's true of babies as well. Just a father looking at his baby, if he's in proximity to his baby, that same thing will happen. So it is very much like a protective thing where it's protecting women and babies from
men.
From men, yeah. And it's like a magic drug. And if a man is not within proximity of his child, his testosterone levels will go right back up.
Men are just so horrible that they just need these like natural chemical
shields.
Yeah.
It seems like there's also, I've read that crying, especially with babies, I'm trying to find it. I don't know if I just made it up. But that for some men, it triggers anger. It's not a sympathy. It's not a let's help. It's like a getting away from that person right away because there's more aggression.
I believe that. I've been on airplanes before.
What does that mean, man?
Oh, okay. So you get it. You get it.
I've heard children cry on airplanes and wondered if they would fit outside the window.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And what does it say about those men, Christy? What does it say about them? Does it say they should never be allowed to procreate, maybe?
I guess that's not true, that they should not be allowed to procreate. But I think different men have different reactions to tears. And I do believe it's like a very strong internal evolutionary thing that you can't help. Otherwise, all fights between couples would just end very well. When women have a reaction where they start crying, I can't do this without talking about my own house and then how awful it goes if I start crying if I'm upset because that just literally makes my husband mad because he doesn't understand and can't comprehend. And
oh, God. That's a really good point, though, because you don't want the husband to just be driven wild while you're working through emotional issues. It's a good thing that his jets are cooled, as the young people say these days, because otherwise you'd be almost accelerating in opposite directions. The woman would be getting further and further away from a place where she's interested in that sort of thing. And that would be a fucking nightmare.
You're looking at the next evolutionary step there, Christy. I think that you two are just more evolved because you look at, and it's a shame that we have to work in stereotypes for this to make sense, but that's exists for a reason.
Right.
There's in movies and sitcoms, when a couple is fighting, if she cries, he's like, oh, well, don't cry. And then it brings him down and he is finally more consoling. It limits him in his anger. And if that's the case, then if your husband gets mad the minute you start crying, is that what you're saying?
I don't think mad is the right word. I think it.
Yeah, it feels like,
him
like
off. It's not a sympathy. It's a.
Yeah, he's annoyed with it.
What is going on?
But it's because.
Yeah, annoyed. Yeah, annoyed might be the right word. That's right.
Probably exactly because he's aware of it. He senses it happening, and it's almost like blackmail to the guy because he can't do anything about it. He's biologically wired to feel bad for you. His thought is probably, no, you can't do this to me. We're having a discussion. I want to be mad about this, and you're not letting me be mad.
Right.
So
it's like a cheat.
Lie down on the couch. Who's next? Soren solving your relationship problems.
No, I think that's how women like to think about crying, is that it's an inauthentic cheat that gets guys right where they want them. Yeah, Soren, you're solving all the problems.
Look at cops. There's so many women who say they cried their way out of tickets. Imagine a police officer who's beholden to that feeling of wanting to help a woman as soon as she cries because he can smell her tears.
It's true. They really are manipulative. Soren has a lot of really interesting theories on women and how they're really screwing things up for manly men.
Well, it's important to look at them objectively, as in if women are objects, right?
If women are objects, then what does crying mean to you?
This object's broken. It's leaking.
Jesus Christ.
Fix yourself immediately.
The next way that we can be led astray from true love. Lady in Red is dancing with me cheek to cheek. There's nobody else. It's just you and me the way I want to be. Anybody?
Yeah, you're going to go with red here. But on that first one, is the person like blind to the other people? Is there a problem with his vision? There's all kinds of stuff in those lyrics that don't make any sense.
Maybe you should have chosen Raspberry Beret.
No, I don't think I should have. So that's purple. No, yeah, Lady in Red, he's just expressing how it's like they're just in a world, alone, really into this Lady in Red, or the original lyrics, but he fancied it up a little bit, really into this Lady in Red.
She's her name, you know, she has a name. Don't call her the Lady in Red.
Come on.
Don't ruin this. Don't ruin the romance, Christy, by bringing names into it.
Her name is Becky.
Yep, ruined.
Becky's fans.
Becky and Reg. Such a shitty name. That girl Becky and... Oh, man, that is my sister-in-law's name. We're going to edit that right the fuck out. There is scientific evidence for the song Lady in Red. A few years ago, a study found that men tended to be attracted to women who were wearing red by... Basically, they showed them hundreds of different pictures of different women and just, again, hot or not. They asked them to rate them on their attractiveness. But occasionally, they would have a double in there that they had just sort of photoshopped, so the color of the dress was a different color. And by putting the same exact picture of a woman in a blue dress or a gray dress, she became instantly less attractive by these guys who were just objectively rating how hot they found a picture. And this has been found. People are more likely, if they're having drinks in a bar that has red walls, all red walls, those people will be more likely to get drunker and be more likely to have sex. It has something to do with the color red naturally speeds up our pulse and like our metabolism. It makes us pay more attention. And it also, for the same reason as fear, we associate whoever we're seeing with the color red and the color red with increased heart rate. And increased heart rate is just signal to our body and stupid brain that this person is attractive, whether they are or not.
Like Carrie when she's covered with the pig's blood.
Right.
Instantly
hot.
Hotter.
Yes, so hot. But no, if you think about it, that's why red light districts have red lights, probably. That just seems like one of those weird accidental things. But nope, the pimps are crazy smart, apparently. But we're all basically bulls in a bullfighting ring.
But we want to have sex with that cape.
Right, exactly.
Nobody listening to this knows this, but I have red hair, and I don't find this true in my everyday life. It having red automatically just brings the boys to the yard.
And thank goodness.
By far the best.
It's never been the case.
Best song lyric quote yet of the day. I think it's like deep red, the same color as blood.
Oh,
and
head.
My sense is that that's where it comes from. I think I read that somewhere, that when there's a battle on and there's blood, people who had a natural quickening of the pulse had an evolutionary advantage, and that's where it comes from. But your hair is not blood red. It's more of a pink, right? Hot pink.
Nailed it.
It's like the color of a sunset. I don't want to undercut that study at all, but I would say that there are colors that are earth tones or colors that you feel comfortable wearing and other colors that just exude confidence because they're not so common. And I don't know if this is all tied together, but I would assume that you see somebody in red and there's an inherent confidence to that. You see a red sports car, you see a woman in a red dress at a wedding or something like that. It's an abbreviation for, hey, this is a person who is very, very comfortable in who they are. And that's inherently attractive. So I'm wondering if maybe that's it.
Look at me. That's what red is.
Yeah. I think that the reason that you associate it with a positive form of confidence, like bring it on, I'm ready for people who are like coming at me, as opposed to somebody who would have a crazy tie-dyed dress at a wedding. Like that's also saying, look at me.
That's a good point.
It's just the wrong kind of look at me.
Yeah. Neon green, I guess, would serve the same effect. And it's not nearly as sexy.
Right. Looking at my neon green tuxedo that I wore to the...
No, Jack, we're naked, remember? So Christy's comfortable enough talking about this stuff. It's just the shirt, Christy. He's got no pants on. It's fine.
I'm in my pajamas, I think. Yeah.
Did you say I think and then go, yeah? Like you checked to see if
I did think they're pajamas, but they're not what I wore before. So they're pajamas-ish. They're like sweat, but I could sleep in these, but these are not what I slept in. There's several layers of thought process that went into that you just didn't catch until I said it.
So here's one of the more controversial theories as expressed through song lyric. I will wash the dishes while you go have a beer. Where is my John Wayne? Where is my prairie song? Where's my happy ending? Where have all the cowboys gone? Where's my Marlboro man? Where's this shiny gun? Where's my Lonely Ranger? Where have all the cowboys gone?
Easy, Jack, take it easy.
Sorry.
Okay.
This song is about what could be considered the feminizing of the American male over the past 50 years. And one controversial theory about why that might be the case, why our movie stars today look like Jude Law, the biggest movie star in the world, I guess. What the fuck? I think that's who we used in the original article, so that's what came to mind. Why they look like Zac Efron.
Jared Leto.
Yeah, Jared Leto. instead of John Wayne and other square-jawed guys who look like our dads. This idea that when they're doing those tests on women finding the right match of, you know, person with a genetically dissimilar MHC, they found that women who were on the birth control pill, the pill basically tricks your body into believing it's pregnant. So that's how it avoids getting pregnant. And because of that, when a woman's pregnant, she stops being attracted to the same type of MHC. And instead, she starts being attracted more to like people like her brother and her father, people who have very similar sort of genetic makeups to them, which makes sense from an evolutionary perspective. Once they're pregnant, they want to be around family who are going to protect them, and they don't want their body telling them to go out and play the field and find more suitors, you know? That part of the job is done, because all women think about it as a job. I just want to get pregnant so I can entrap this guy. No. And so with the birth control pill, women's bodies, some studies have shown that their bodies will tell them to be attracted to men who don't have the right thing and then don't have the right genetic makeup. And then when they come off the pill and they're like married to this person and ready to start a family, all of a sudden they can't stand the scent of the person. This has been linked to the rise in divorces, which divorces haven't been rising since 1979, but that's sort of a statistical error that everybody always quotes. But it's also the idea that women are less attracted to these manly men who can get them pregnant and more attracted to sort of the type of guy who you would want to be around you when you were pregnant has been blamed for guys becoming more fine-featured and less manly, rough men in movies and in our magazines, at least the magazines that I read.
So that's depressing that if you know somebody for their entire life while they're on birth control, you get married and everything, you've known them for 7 years and then you decide to have children and they go off birth control and all of a sudden she's not interested in the guy anymore. That's it's possible. Not,
again, this is one of millions of factors, but it's just a theory that's out there.
So the birth control makes your body think it's pregnant, and when you're pregnant, you go for safe.
Yeah, somebody who's nurturing, somebody who's, yeah.
Right, safe disarming. In terms of they don't need a really high testosterone count, and they also don't need a genetically dissimilar MHC makeup. It's
it seems
fine.
Like I've never seen that play out in real life like that. It's interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. This is why I'm asking you. What are women like, Christy?
I don't know what other women like. I don't think women like pretty feminine boys. I don't know. Who's the big movie stars right now besides...
George Clooney, I guess, would be a more masculine type.
I think he's rugged, yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody loves him. For example, Leonardo DiCaprio started off as this very girly...
Spindly.
Not the right word.
But pigeon-chested.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of...
You had those locked and loaded, man.
Weedy.
And then as he's aged... See, I can only say from my perspective, I think it's gotten more interesting, and he didn't stay skinny and small and with the pretty little face, and that made him more interesting and bankable, I guess, as a star as he got older and not feminine, unfeminine, masculine. That's the word, masculine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have a hard time picturing that playing out in the real world, but maybe that's because I'm in my 30s and I don't see young girls with their boyfriends out right now. I see grown-up men who look like men with their wives.
Christy lives in an old Western town. She works at a saloon.
I do.
Just breaks up fist fights night after night.
They all have beards here. It's like Robert Brockway populated the whole town, and everybody's Robert Brockway.
Funny story, he did.
He did. Robert Brockway's lived here before, we think. We think he has lived in this town before. That's a whole other story that I live in right now.
Are there a bunch of empty whiskey bottles and vomit everywhere?
Everywhere, and
yeah,
then we put
him.
Two and two together and figured it out.
Some trees that looked like maybe they were chopped down with just his face. That's probably
yeah.
Robert. Yeah.
Everywhere. It's a good theory. I just don't know how it plays out, and I just don't know a lot of women that go for that feminine-looking guy.
I'm sort of banking on it, Christy.
Oh, come on now. You're already married. You've already won.
Off the market, ladies.
We talk about how the things that can dupe you into thinking that you're in love. one of the things that happens when you start to feel affection for another person and you want to mingle, this part of your brain that's responsible for logic sort of shuts down. It physically shuts down, like almost like you're in a dream state. In the same way that you can go through a dream and not notice that things are wrong along the way, that same part of your brain shuts down while you're in love, and you will literally have a blindness to this person's faults. This came up in a recent pitch for us, so sorry if you're the one who wrote that and I'm stealing your thunder right now.
Yeah, we'll use it. That's really interesting.
So even though other people in your life, you know, you always see these movies and stuff where friends are saying, no, he's trouble, this is wrong, this is wrong. Well, it probably is. You're just, you don't notice it because that part of your brain has shut down specifically so that you will get together with this person.
That's interesting. And so you're saying that that's why hotties end up with douchebags, right?
With naughties, yeah.
Right. There's some study that said that, just going off of what you were saying earlier about divorces being like major brain damage, they also say that breakups are like cocaine withdrawal. When you're in love, it's like being high on cocaine. All the same chemicals in your brain can be found. And then during a breakup, you're just bedridden and can't move anywhere. And apparently that's the same thing that people, actors who are at those spas, are going through. Those poor, poor actors.
You heard it from Crack.com, ladies and gentlemen. You go through a breakup, start coke. You'll be fine. Yeah, exactly. Just a good transition into singlehood.
Just evens things out.
But that's also true if you don't break up. That period of being in love when you first get with somebody, that's like being on drugs. But then that kind of eases off. You just don't have that big crash of a total breakup. And if you've broken up, you probably were over that in love part anyway. You were already halfway there.
Well, unless you just get dumped out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
And dumped. That's different.
Chris has no idea what that's like.
But most stable marriages are just like Jack Nicholson's life. They're just like, you know, good at using cocaine and do it pretty well without hurting themselves or anybody else. But
that's funny to think about.
The bloom is probably off the rose.
Rather than be a functional drug addict, you're a functional lover.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what you have to learn to be in a healthy marriage. You have to learn to love cocaine all over again.
I had stuff in my notes about boobs and oral sex, but that's not so much about attraction as it is about our bodies evolving and there are theories about why these things exist. So
Those are fun to hit really quick.
Yeah, take it out. Put it on the table.
Boobs.
Let's dissect
it. Okay, I'm going to go with boobs first. My article, the one that we were referencing early, had a theory about why human boobs are like they are, but also Robert Evans had an article, so I'm going to pull both of those. Hopefully you weren't planning on giving him a chance to talk about sex later. So there's two theories about why women, human women, have boobs like we do. One of them, the theory that was on my article, is that they exist so that babies don't suffocate, our little human babies don't suffocate when they're nursing, because if you see other animals that nurse, a lot of them have snouts. So their faces have this natural projection so that when they nurse, they have some air that goes into their nose at the same time.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, I can't think of any other animals that have boobs other
there
than
aren't
like
any.
Cows.
Only when they're milking. Otherwise,
when they're milking. Yeah. And even then, it's just a different, it looks different. And then they go back to flat-chested, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Their animals, their babies have little snouts that can get to the milk without killing themselves, but human babies do not. And so the theory is that we needed our boobs to get round so that our babies could eat and not die.
That is a fear that I always have when I see a mother nursing her kid really just pushing their face in there. I'm always like, man, can that thing breathe? You know? It's like a lot of
work. Yeah, they manage. Yeah. Babies are smart. They figure it out. And then Robert's article that was very interesting, this is an old theory from the 60s. This guy wrote this book called The Naked Ape, and his name is Desmond Morris, and he had the theory. Well, first of all, okay, so when humans started to figure out that face-to-face sex was a good thing, it was so that they could strengthen social bonds. But they missed the other way to have sex where they got to see butts. So the theory is that human women evolved big boobs to mimic butts so that men would have something to attract them to their front sides.
Did you just make Robert's theory sound crazy on purpose so that your theory would sound more correct? Because
I think it's crazy because boobs in their natural state don't look like butts. You need a freaking $60 bra.
That's true.
Put that together to look like a butt. No boob.
They always look
butt.
Like they're in an argument and they don't want to talk to each other anymore.
Yeah, they're far away from each other. That's a natural state of things. So I think that dispels that theory right there. Like, he doesn't know what boobs actually look like, and he's been working off of cleavage his whole life. And
so you're
know.
Calling so, our editor, Robert Evans, from
no.
a recent
I'm
episode of the podcast,
out.
A virgin.
No. I'm calling out Mr. Desmond Morris.
I know.
I like both theories. I think that's why women have two boobs. Like one for each theory.
One for each, yeah. Because I started to research where have we come on this theory, because we just published it a few years ago, but it's pretty old. And you would think scientists could have knocked it down or said, yeah, that's right at some point. But there is evidence about, I don't know if they're monkeys or chimps or whatever, or that their chest areas have evolved to mimic their lady parts areas. So there's coloring and there's stuff going on there that it kind of correlates with this theory as well. And that's used as evidence in that direction. But
and it gets them to have face-to-face sex, which...
I don't think it does, but I think maybe it attracts the fellas to come. They see what's going on. What a nightmare. You have your chest mimicking. Okay.
I remember that article, and I remember finding that phrase and that theory really funny, that people were having so much sex that like it was like they wanted to like make it a more social thing. So they developed the ability to like have more face-to-face sex. It just made me picture these groups of people just sitting around having casual conversations while having sex with one another, while the rival tribe, one tree over, is just glumly having wordless sex with each other from behind. I have weird shit
out.
In my imagination.
Yeah, now that you say that, somebody had to say, let's try this differently than those apes over there. And somebody had to make the call. And
it was Daenerys Targaryen. We saw it happen. She wanted to flip around. But at the risk of being too crass, it does open up an answer to the fetish of a pearl necklace, honestly, if everybody knows what that is. But essentially having intercourse with somebody's chest, that suddenly makes a lot more sense with that theory.
Right, and that is how humans procreate, so it's a good point.
Just making the good one.
Soren has a list of words in front of him. Pearl necklace was on there, and he just had to cross it off.
All right, we almost done? I should get through all of them. Cleveland Steamers, Three Sanchez, Space Docking.
Space Docking.
I'm going to have to look up everything.
Yeah. What was the last thing that you really said that you wanted to talk about before you got off this podcast, Christy?
Oral sex helps prevent miscarriages. She swallows.
What?
Where did was the source
That's
for this entry Maxim?
That's how it goes. This is from Robert Evans' article, too. Oh, I think Jesus I edited Christ. That one. That's why I remember this so clearly. So this is another theory, kind of like the kissing thing, where you're trying to build up your immunity. And so there are some women who, when they get pregnant, their bodies eventually want to reject the fetus because it's not a part of their body. Their immune systems don't recognize it. So there's this theory that we know that after you have sex for the women, the immune system collects material from the cervix and takes it back to the lymph nodes so they recognize the sperm and says, this guy's okay, welcome him.
He's cool. Everybody be cool.
Yeah, he's cool. He's invited. Hopefully, maybe not. I mean, sometimes not, but hopefully he's invited. So the theory is that the more you take in the genetic material, your body will adjust, and when you get pregnant, it will accept the baby. And so there's someone who says that's true even if you're bringing in the material. I keep saying it that way. The other way, too, it's not proven, but so what they figured out is that women who had more oral sex had fewer miscarriages because their bodies were accepting the babies more than other women who did not.
That makes sense.
It seems like a correlation, causation. It seems like there could be many reasons.
So
she has a healthy sex drive, and so therefore she has better reproductive health or something.
It makes sense to me. Whichever direction the sperm comes in, it just goes to the tummy, right?
Jesus Christ.
Where the babies go?
Did Christy's son just jump on the phone? Homo sapiens have outgrown their use.
All the strangers came today, and it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, you pretty thing.
All right, that was our discussion about the secret processes that might be controlling sex with people. There was a big chunk of time, actually, when we resisted running articles like this, because I think the first person to pitch it was angling it as, here are secret tricks to make people have sex with you, and that felt gross, and we eventually decided it was worth covering from the other angle. Here are things that can land you in bed and in a long-term relationship with the wrong person. And there are these secret landmines that can lead you astray. So in other words, things like the mystery method. There's perfectly valid reasons to want to know about the mystery method's various peacocking techniques so that you don't fall victim to them. Or in case you're wondering what all those dudes are doing out at bars with Dr. Seuss hats on. All right, on to footnotes. We listened to Allure off the Grey album. In case you're not familiar with the Grey album, that is the mashup album by music producer Danger Mouse from 2004. He remixed the acapella track from Jay-Z's Black album with the Beatles album, The Beatles, also known as the White Album. And I used it here because it's called Allure, so that seemed appropriate. It's got some killer love song lyrics throughout, but they're just directed at what Jay-Z calls the game. But if you just made the lyrics about a woman he loves or how she makes him feel, you would have some really great love song lyrics that get at some of the stuff we were talking about, even like a lot of cocaine comparisons about how the game makes him feel, so that you can treat your nose and still won't come close. The game is a light bulb with 11 million volts, and I'm just a moth addicted to the floss. That is a good lyric for a Smokey Robinson love song, if the game was replaced by your love or something. We listened to Hot Knife by Fiona Apple off her last album with the long title that starts The Idler Wheel. It's a great song. I am a sucker for layered vocals, and this song knits a quilt out of all the different vocal tracks. And the entire album just has a cool sound to it, and in a podcast full of people talking like a bunch of field scientists observing the mating habits of a foreign species, I thought it would be good to have a little of the feeling of lust restored to the proceedings, and I think the song nicely captures that. We heard Oh You Pretty Things, which includes the themes of pretty people changing tastes and what's considered attractive, and is just generally one of my favorite Bowie songs. Oh! Exclamation point, You Pretty Things. Oh! You Pretty Things. And we are going to ride out on that. Back next week, we will talk to you then. Thanks.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio. Boom.com. The wolf dead.